This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
This episode is sponsored by Read It Forward. Read It Forward is a book geek's best friend. Since 2008, Read It Forward has been surprising readers with weekly giveaways, behind-the-scenes sneak peeks at new titles and new voices, and literary lifestyle chats. Discover your next great read at readitforward.com. Read it first and pass it on.
This is the Book Riot Podcast, a weekly news and talk show about what's new, cool, and worth talking about in the world of books and reading. This is episode 88, and we're recording on Thursday, January 8th. I'm Jeff O'Neill. I'm here with Rebecca Shinsky. We're coming to you from bookriot.com, and we're trying to stay thawed.
We are. We're coming to you from the igloo.
If you're listening to this in North America, at least, or Canada and the United States, the chances are you are as cold as we are, because I saw a map, and it looks super bad for most of us. And if you're like Michigan or Wisconsin or something, good. I mean, cut open a tauntaun and crawl right in. I mean, that's just, it's nasty out there.
Or put on your snuggly Book Riot hoodie.
Yeah, that's right. That's right, which you can order at store.bookriot.com. So we're back. We've been away from sort of the daily drumbeat of the news for a few weeks, and we're getting back to it, and there's stuff to talk about.
It's been an interesting week.
Yeah, it has been. I mean, we're kind of through the best of 2014, 2015 prediction type shows, not just on our site, but sort of on the web and on news sites in general. So we're kind of getting ready for just what the normal cadence of 2015 is going to look like. We had a good week of new books. We'll get to that here at the end.
Oh, but such a good week.
We're in the book. You know, we're in the book, the meat of the book world thing. I know what I was going to mention that I didn't mention last time. And I got to toot my little horn here. So talked about Reading Lives, the other podcast that I host, and Rebecca's been on. You've heard her if you've subscribed to the show. It was in this feed a while ago. But my other show, Reading Lives, that I do for Book Riot, where I interview interesting people about their lives and books, it got a nice little mention from Entertainment Weekly as one of the 20 podcasts to watch in 2015. And it was there with some pretty big shows, like 99% Invisible and Fareed Zakaria's show for CNN. And like, it was a huge surprise, and I am really grateful for that. And thank you. I know a lot of the people who listen to this show have been listening and spreading the word. And I have no idea how it got to Entertainment Weekly, but I'm assuming that someone tweeted about it or something they saw it on Book Riot or passed it to someone who listens and writes for Entertainment Weekly. But that was a huge deal. And whatever my mystery benefactor was for that show, I really appreciate that. And
so awesome.
If you haven't had a chance to check out the show, maybe that's enough of an incentive that the big bad EW said, you know, maybe pay attention. Well,
and the current episode. So last week was Amanda interviewed.
Yes.
So you can hear our comrade Amanda and all about her reading life. This week's episode was Megan Mayhew Bergman, whose new book, Almost Famous Women, is in our feature at the end
of the show.
And next week is Daniel Jose Older, who also had a great new book out this
and
week.
And we had a really, really good conversation too. And if you're listening to this show, that one will be out because they come out at the same time.
Fascinating, interesting people talking about their book lives.
I'm always looking for good ideas for guests too. I've got a big list, but again, that's only my network extended. So if you've got an off the beaten path or on the beaten path that you just want to pass on, send it along to me. You can email me here at podcast@bookriot.com, or there's a dedicated email over there. ReadingLives@bookriot.com. Okay, my horn is sufficiently tooted. let's talk about our sponsor this week. Read It Forward. This is if you do listen to this show, I think there's a good chance you're going to like this site, right? Isn't that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so. Read It Forward is run by the folks at Random House, and it started as a newsletter. Like, they've been running Read It Forward for about as long as I've been blogging.
Yeah.
We both started in 2008, and so it's been cool to see it evolve, but it's right in the, you know, sort of up the alley in the wheelhouse of people who care about books enough to be reading about them on the internet.
Right.
Yes.
So they do a couple things. So since they're Random House, they've got access to a lot of authors. So you can get sneak peeks, behind the scenes, kind of making of stuff. They've got a lot of good giveaways, stuff that's not out yet. One that's on there right now is Ishiguro's new book, The Buried Giant, which we've talked about as something we were looking forward to this year. That's actually the top story right now. You can go enter there. You know, Eric, we talked about Eric Larson's new book that's coming out about the Lusitania. They've got an author essay from Eric Larson, you know, talking about what he's doing there and polls and all kinds of interesting stuff. So it's an easy, you know, as things are today, it's an easy sign up. You follow on Facebook, Twitter, sign up with an email, and you can get a look and see what they're doing as well.
Yeah, you get access to cool book giveaways. Read It Forward was one of the first places that I remember like winning a book and getting...
Oh, is that right?
And getting a book to review on my blog. Like they were forward thinking about book bloggers and interacting with people who were writing about books on the internet in 2008, which it's taken a lot of publishers like up until the present to,
and maybe
to
the future,
get on board. Maybe. Right. And we're not at 100% adoption and success there yet of acknowledging what the internet is doing for literary community. But Read It Forward has been doing that for quite a while. And there's great stuff about your reading life, books in translation, best book covers of 2014. Like, I think, you know, if you like what you see on Book Riot, you're going to like some of the content that you find at Read It Forward. And then they also have bonus book content that ties into, you know, sort of extras that they make available online that tie into new releases from primarily from Random House authors. And there's one, you know, Survival of the Geekiest. It's a reader's guide for The Martian by Andy Weir, which, you know, we loved. Some book club in a box ideas, you know, stuff you can incorporate into your book club discussion. There's a little something for everybody here. I think it's a really good resource.
Yeah. So when you're trying to stay warm this weekend with your iPad on your couch or something, check out readitforward.com. See if it's for you and subscribe and follow them the best you can. All right.
And thanks so much for
sponsoring. Thank you so much for sponsoring the show. You know, there's a good chance the biggest book story of 2015 was the first book story of 2015. I mean, I'm not saying for sure, but this was like January 3rd or something. And Mark Zuckerberg this runs this little company you've heard of called Facebook. It's really catching on in college students. is starting a book club. And I guess I didn't know he did this until I was starting to follow the story, but I guess for the last few years, he had sort of crowdsourced a New Year's resolution. And this year, I don't know if he actually takes the vote and that's final or he just takes ideas, but whatever the case may be, at the end of his decision-making process, his resolution for 2015 was to read more, and the structure that's taken for him is to read one book every couple of weeks, and on top of that, to make a book club out of it that's going to live on Facebook called A Year of Books. So if you go to if you're on Facebook and you want to check it out, you can go to just search for Year of Books.
It is 225,000 likes
in a week,
now.
Which we've been doing our site for 10,000 years. No, it just feels that way. For, you know, 3.5 years now, and we have about 300,000. And we've done well, but 225 in a week. He's got like 30 million Facebook friends or followers or however. I sometimes get lost in the different words.
Yeah, it was a post on his personal Facebook, which is available publicly, but on his personal profile, announcing this project. And then that linked to the Year of Books page, which he's running as like a separate thing with its 225,000. Who knows? It's 225,000 this morning, but by the time the show drops,
yeah,
it's
240. I don't know.
Higher than that. I have questions. Like, are they? Is Facebook going to game it so that Zuck's page gets a better impression and, you know,
yeah, that's inside baseball stuff for
Facebook
us, right?
Page.
Yeah, yeah. I would assume so. Yeah. Right? I assume he's got 100% reach for his fans. Yeah, I just refreshed it and like 15 new likes in the last 30 seconds.
It's
so
totally
it's still
bananas.
The thing.
And it's clear, like it's still in the news cycle. So all of the book-related media are writing about this. Bob tells me that it's bubbling into normal people internet, not just book people internet. Yeah, he was like, I haven't read anything detailed about it, but I've seen the headlines. And I was like, okay, all right. So people who aren't us are going to see this and think it's interesting and care about it. The first book is called The End of Power.
It's not one I'd heard of, interestingly. Had you heard about this?
I know.
Okay.
By Moises Naim. I think I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly.
A for effort.
It's a book about how the power in the world is shifting sort of out of boardrooms and into the public sphere, away from a small group of individual people and large governments, you know, and other organizations like corporations, and towards people, normal people, having power to change the world. This is like right in Zuckerberg's social media power of the internet wheelhouse. This it seems like an interesting pick.
Mm-hmm. It does seem like an interesting pick. And we know one of the fascinating things about it, and there are about 10,000 interesting pieces of this for us to talk about. We probably can't get to all of them today. But he hasn't said anything about what the future picks are. The book, our books will emphasize learning about new cultures, beliefs, histories, and technologies. That's a bet out. Suggestions for new books to read are always welcome. They're going to moderate discussions and group memberships to keep us on topic. And that's all that's been said.
Yeah, well,
really.
The publisher of this one, Basic Books, which is part of the Perseus book group, said they didn't get any advance notice of this. So when the book came out in 2013, it had sold about 20,000 copies across all formats. About a quarter of those were ebooks, and it sold more than that number of ebooks just since the announcement.
Yeah, Amazon sold out of print copies, I saw.
Yeah, it went up to number 19 on Amazon's bestseller list earlier this week, and booksellers had placed orders for more than 10,000 copies. Copies of it. So this thing is
driving
book sales.
People are coming after it for foreign rights they didn't have before.
You know that like every agent and publicist and author out there is trying to figure out how they can get their galley into his hands.
And
he's not just doing new books, clearly. Like this is a 2013
I want to know how release. Yeah, there's, you know, all of the parts of my book interested person brain are pointed at this in different directions. Mm-hmm. Part of it is just curiosity, like how it does, you know, talk about a good Reading Lives guest. Anyway, how did this come into his hands? How do books get into his hands? It's very, very interesting to think about it that way. Someone of that, I mean, look, Facebook has, 1.6 billion users, which is a number that is beyond comprehension. And his time, you know, we're all busy, but in terms of the value cost of his time, it's just literally unfathomable. And I use that term. So, you know, I just don't know that he's going to be taking pitches from
I imagine he gets books, like, since he doesn't work in publishing, I would imagine people do try to send him stuff, but that he probably picks his books the way that most people who don't work in publishing pick their books, which is they talk to their friends and coworkers and they pay attention to what bubbles up.
Well,
in
his
media
CEO is Sheryl Sandberg, coverage. And she's a serious reader.
She's
based
well
on
read.
Lean In, I'm sure there are thousands of other people.
Nathan Maharaj, who is one of the great folks at Kobo, was speculating on Twitter this week about how interesting it would be if Mark Zuckerberg used the just ridiculous amounts of data that are available to him from Facebook about what people read and what they're interested in reading to make selections based on that. And I'm not sure he was making an argument about what Zuckerberg should pick so much as, well, if he wanted to pick books that he thinks people are interested in reading, he certainly has the data available to him. But the direction of this seems to be more like, I think it's similar to the Oprah methodology. Mm. And because Mark Zuckerberg and Oprah are very different people, of course, the selections are going to be very different. But it's not so much, here are selections I think people want to read. This book, to me, looks like, here is a book that I want people to read and that I think/ hope you should be interested
or in. Or maybe I'm just interested in, I'm just going to open it up and do. I mean, I don't know. Like, had he read the book before picking it? It doesn't say anything about that.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So we don't know. I mean, I think over time this will become clear. It is one of those situations by making it a public, you know, it's one thing if it's to do a reading challenge or resolution for yourself and, you know, whatever, do what you want. It does feel like it takes on a bit of a, I don't know, public trust element when you open it up to have a presence like this and promote it as the most powerful person on the internet. I don't think that's an exaggeration. And making it its own thing that, you know, I wonder if how that will affect, you know, what he's going to do. Will there be fiction? I would guess it's going to be largely nonfiction, but that's purely speculation on my part. Mm-hmm. I would think that it's not going to be open for like sponsorship or you can buy your way in. Like, I don't know what publisher could have an unmeaningful amount of money they could throw at Zuckerberg to get him to like pick their book over one thing or another. And
they'd have to give up their New York Times banner ads.
I wrote a research thing about the Oprah Book Club. It was still going on when I was in college because I was interested in it even then, the publishing side, even as I was more of an academic. But those picks weren't, you couldn't buy your way into Oprah's book club there. Mm-hmm. And my memory was at the height of the Oprah Book Club, she could move a million copies.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's kind of what it was. Now, again, this was the mid-90s. It was about the heyday. And there was, Amazon maybe had just started. Mm-hmm. So it really was independent bookstores, Barnes & Nobles, and that sticker on the table. Like, a lot of things would coalesce to make Oprah's Book Club picks surge at one of as her format, but also that sticker, and it would get put in the most, you know, a lot. Anyway, so it'd be interesting to see here.
There's a New York Times piece about the book sales that have resulted from Zuckerberg's club so far. And they refer to this Oprah club as well, because she restarted it online, I think, last year as Oprah's Book Club 2.0.
Right.
And this piece says that moves millions of copies, but it doesn't specify how many millions.
The most recent one does?
It says, Oprah's Book Club, which she restarted online as Oprah's Book Club 2.0, moves millions of copies. But it also says she only chooses a few titles each year.
Oh, right.
And since Zuck is going to pick one every 2 weeks, the author of this article, Alexandra Alter, speculates that number of selections might dilute the impact of each one. Like, it'll be interesting to see, if the interest, you know, and what happens to the second selection, the fifth selection.
Yeah, like the 19th selection in August, right?
Right. Like, how much of the interest in this book is because of this book, and how much of the interest in it is that it's the first selection in Mark Zuckerberg's book club, and how long will that interest be sustained? And my guess would be that by the middle of the year, the sales are going to spike or not spike based more on what the book is.
Yeah, some of them will catch on more than others. Yeah. But also, it's only going to be a year. I mean, I guess he could extend it indefinitely, but my sense of this is a one-shot deal.
Yeah, I'm so interested in how he's going to participate in the conversation.
Yeah.
Online. And a part of me, which, I mean, I'm sure that Mark Zuckerberg knows what life on Facebook is like. I mean, I hope that he does. But the community manager part of me went and looked at the Facebook page for A Year in Books this morning and had a very gleeful moment of like, oh, good. people are being people on Facebook to him the way that some people are people on Facebook to us and to everyone else on the internet.
Like, we're like 700 comments, and it's very hard to get through.
There's like people telling him he's stupid to do this, and because he has so much power, he should have picked a different resolution that would actually make a difference. There are people pitching him their mom's, aunt's, neighbor's, best friend's self-published memoir. There are people talking about how two books a month is too much for them to read, or too much for them to buy, or like whatever else.
It's right, because you have to do it. You have to read everyone. I didn't know if you read the end user license agreement when you joined Facebook, but we all have to read these or they kill us. That's the problem.
It was that, like, I had a little moment of like, oh, goody, at least he will now know what this is like.
It is an interesting microcosm of the strengths and weaknesses of Facebook on a whole. Mm-hmm. Reach is remarkable. The diversity is remarkable. And that reach and that diversity also results in...
Sometimes they're a nightmare.
It can be a nightmare. And I don't know. I the whole thing is just terribly, terribly interesting. I don't see a downside to me. I mean, I've seen some people, because they have to write things online, like try to pick it apart to some degree. And I just can't get there.
I just can't find a place in my heart to be angry about or even concerned about the most powerful person on the internet telling people to read more books.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't have a problem with
it. I mean,
at all.
If he starts picking books by a bunch of racists or, you know, I don't, well, you know, it's hard to say. But
not even that. Like, I'm curious if you have any hopes or ideas for what he could pick. I'm going to be watching the selections for...
We might even talk about it every time there's a new pick for the year. Maybe we should do that.
Yeah.
You know, and just sort of keep an eye on it. It's only every
couple months. And I'm sure I'll probably end up reading some of them. This book sounds interesting.
It does certainly sounds interesting to me.
I don't think I'm going
to
read it in time for the discussion that's happening about it.
Well, do you want to follow that discussion? I mean, this apparently, our first book will be The End of Power. Here's the complete post about it.
Yeah.
The End of Power by Moses Naim. Feel free to discuss in the comments here, but please keep all conversation relevant to this book. That was on January 2nd. As of today, it's January 8th, meaning there's, 10 more days in the cycle for this book. Is this it? I mean, it's just sort of here's the book, go crazy?
And here's the giant Facebook
thread for
it? Here's
the 753 comment, completely disorganized and eyeballs bleed thread about it?
This is a place where I think it points out a weakness of Facebook,
yes,
where
absolutely.
It's virtually impossible to have threaded, topic-focused conversations.
Absolutely.
And we do pretty specific topic focused stuff on Book Riot, mm-hmm. and people still can take those and branch it out in a jillion different directions in the comments. And it would be so great for a book like this, for any book club. I think you need sort of a general thread and a thread that's like, what questions did you have? And
or then like a another Goodreads group.
Right.
Can
like Goodreads would be super useful for this, but Mark Zuckerberg's not going to run anything on a social network that's not Facebook.
No, even so as ill suited as Facebook is for this.
Right. So he gets the benefit of Facebook's huge usership and audience, but also he'll be limited by Facebook's limitations and functionality that you can't have those channelized conversations of like, let's go over here to talk about this one idea in this chapter. And let's go over to this thread if you want to talk about this other thing. And what were your favorite quotes? Mm-hmm. Like just to throw it all like as a moderator of a thing and as a participant in a book club.
Yeah. Is he throwing any staff at this?
I think like one open thread is just got to be a nightmare. Well, he says it's going to be moderated. But what, I can't
but
imagine
what is that,
he's
like, Zuck is not going to be in there deleting people saying spammy stuff. I don't get it.
I assume someone at Facebook, it's their job to read all these.
I'm sure. Well, they've got what 22,000 employees and like 1,000,000 interns. I'm sure they could figure something out. Mm-hmm. But again, I'm not criticizing it. I don't want to say it's just there's difficulties in doing anything like this on any platform.
Yeah, yeah.
And the ones about Facebook are particularly interesting. And also we know them well. Since we've spent a lot of time, Facebook's a big part of what we do at Book
I think
Ryan
I'm gonna,
as well.
My goal for the year, I've just decided, will be to at least read one of the selections and try to participate in the Facebook
That's good. I'll try to do the same. Yeah, let's watch and maybe we'll pick one together.
Yeah, and just
and
to get the full experience of trying to be a person in that thread, having a conversation and see what it's like. But I hope there will be a diversity of selections in terms of content and genre and author. And, you know, this is an interesting place to start, like we were saying, because it's about, you know, a shift in power out of boardrooms, which is pretty much where Zuckerberg lives, even if he thinks of himself as an individual who's using the power of the internet to make a difference.
Right.
He's now a guy in a boardroom. He went out of the public square and up there. But I hope it's not for my own interest and for the possible impact he could make. I hope it's not 24 books that are all about sort of business adjacent stuff.
It is interesting that interest seems to be there to do it. Like people are liking it and participate. Like there's a desire for something like this.
Well, and that the book sold. It wasn't just people liking the Facebook page to follow it. There seems to be actual measurable action being taken. Mm-hmm.
It is super interesting. And you participated in a post we ran on the site today that were suggestions for Zuckerberg to pick, and I haven't read the piece yet. Do you want to say you picked one, right? What was your pick?
My pick was Daring Greatly by Brené Brown, which I was looking at this first selection, The End of Power, and thinking about how it's businessy and connected to the ways that the world is changing. And Daring Greatly is the same thing, but from a different side. Brown is a sociologist, and she has spent her career, several decades, studying vulnerability. Mm. And the benefits and challenges of like showing up, letting yourself be seen in a very human, real way, as in like, this is me and these are the mistakes that I make, like, you know, acknowledging it when you screw up, either whether it's at work or at home with your partner or with your kids or with a friend, showing the ways in which you're imperfect and how that kind of realness and taking that risk in environments that are welcoming to it, or if you can construct an environment that is supportive of it, is really beneficial for the ways that we work and for the kinds of relationships that we have and for the ways that we structure our families. And that to me seems like I thought it was a really terrific book, and it affected the way that I thought about how I am in all kinds of environments. So rather than talking about how businesses work, Zuckerberg could take the opportunity to have a book about how individuals behave. And that's applicable whether you work in a blue-collar job or whether you work in the highest, most fancy boardroom in the country. Whether you're married or single, you have friends, everyone has some context in their life in which a book like that could make a difference. And I'd like to see him take on some of those topics. I guess as a side to this, because there are a jillion questions about the Zuckerberg Book Club, I wonder how interesting / controversial these picks could really be. Mm. Like, if you're Mark Zuckerberg, do you feel pressured to shoot up the middle and not take any big risks? Like, On a fiction side, I thought Americana would be a really interesting choice for him. But that's a book, or like Baratunde Thurston's How to Be Black, which is nonfiction. Big issues, important discussions, but will he shy away from that and try to go, you know, kind of straight up the middle? Do you think there's even room to ask big questions?
Well, it depends what is, I mean, it depends on what his taste for turmoil is. He doesn't seem to me to be a guy that minds too much pissing people off. Though he doesn't go out his way to do it either. He's an interesting person in a lot of respects, and not to say that I know him, but I do follow Facebook's comings and goings pretty closely just because it impacts what we do on the site quite a bit. Yeah, I don't know. My sense at this point is that he's picking books he wants to read. Again, this is total Kremlinology, which is what I do with Facebook. Facebook Kremlinology is one of my, my side projects. I was going to write for the Post, and I just ran out of time, but I had two ideas. One, one was, so I struggled with this because, like, what if I pick a social issue that I think people should know about? It's like, well, it's almost bigger than any particular social issue, right? Like, you almost want sort of meta. So I was thinking maybe Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman, just because he's a Nobel Prize winner in economics, but this is a lifetime project he and several people he's worked with over time in psychology, talking about the two systems that we use to make decisions and think logically, the fast, intuitive, and emotional system, system one, and system two, which is the more deliberate, more logical system, and how we make logical errors and logical mistakes, and what kinds of things affect our thinkings, and how and how we can sort of buttress ourselves against not all mistakes, but certain kinds of mistakes. And I just thought online discourse is one of those places where I would like to see people think about their own thinking more often, do a little metacognition. And that was one I thought, you know, I think a lot of people would find really interesting and you know,
sort of
helpful.
Like the Cliff Notes version of that book is You Are Not So Smart by David McCraney,
right,
which is
yes.
like each chapter, Kahneman's is this, it's such a fantastic book. And you talked about it enough last year that I finally was like, I'm going to read this thing, even though it's enormous.
Yeah, it was like a 20-hour audiobook or something like that.
You Are Not So Smart, each chapter is about a different one of those cognitive biases that we have, and like in a sort of more digestible
way. Yeah, more
way.
Of a Freakonomics kind of way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's a perfect way to put it, with anecdata and examples from people's lives, and either of those, or maybe putting them together, that would be super interesting for Facebook.
But I had one fiction pick. I had trouble with this, thinking of a fiction book, but I eventually landed on Super Sad True Love Story by Gary Steingart, which part of it is about the sort of a dystopian future world that has social networking and digital connectivity at the heart of what ails us, and as a sort of a cautionary thinking sort of thing. Or I was thinking William Gibson's like Neuromancer, the new one.
Like The Word Exchange.
Yeah,
that came
something
out last
like
year.
That. So that might be an interesting pick, especially since thinking about future technology in a nonfiction way feels to me like a fool's errand. Like you just don't know.
Yeah.
So the way, if you want to think about that, is probably to do sci-fi or some sort of fiction that takes, you know, Jennifer Egan's visit from the Goon Squad would be pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm. Aleef the Unseen.
Yeah, that would be interesting as well. Or Ready Player One by Ernie Cline. You know, that you could go a couple different ways there, but all right. So anything else about the book? I mean, I think we will be coming back to it. Probably every time he picks a new book, it's going to be a big deal in our little world of following book news, I would imagine. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I don't have anything else. I'm excited to see how this goes. And I'm really happy that we're already seeing numbers about book sales from it, that a person who's in a position of great power is talking about the importance of books in his own life and encouraging other people to read. I am so down with that.
The last thing that got me thinking was more of another hypothetical. It's like, who could start a book club that would have more impact in terms of readership and book sales? I was struggling to come up with something.
I mean, the only thing that we've had even resembling the Oprah bump is the Colbert and Jon Stewart thing. But this is, I think, decidedly bigger.
I think it will be too, especially on an ongoing basis, because the Colbert was a one or two off.
Like if Neil deGrasse Tyson had a book club,
yeah.
It wouldn't be this big, but he has enough exposure and a I following. Mean, I guess, or like right. George Takei. He has a huge internet following.
Well, I guess if you go for huge internet following, you go with like Taylor Swift, who is a book fan, apparently.
I so want to subscribe to a Taylor Swift book club. I didn't know that that's a thing that,
you never even knew that's what you
always
wanted.
I just got so excited when you said that.
Because she's got like 47 million Twitter followers or something like that. Now,
and she's very articulate in the way
smart,
that she talks
engaged,
about what she does. Oh, yes, a Taylor Swift book club, please.
But so some part of it is following, and second is the nature of that following, and the third is the platform, right?
Right.
I mean, Zuckerberg has, the platform and control over it.
Yeah.
You know, so I that part's going to be very difficult.
Going to have to call our friends at Tumblr who run the Reblog book club, because there's so much Taylor Swift love on Tumblr, and there's so many great book people on Tumblr, and I think Taylor Swift should have a Tumblr book club.
There you go. Get to her. I mean, she's spoken for Scholastic and anywhere.
Emma Watson.
Yeah, get Hermione on board. That's very interesting as well. I mean, let's say when Obama leaves office, maybe. That's kind of the level we're talking about with Zuckerberg. I mean, I'm not kidding. Like, that's kind of the strata we're running in.
Presidential Library ran a book club site.
Again, it's partisan, so I don't know. In a weird way, Zuckerberg or someone like Taylor Swift, you know, are a bunch of Republicans going to sign up for the Obama book club? I would guess not. And vice versa, if it was a Republican, if George Bush started a book club.
But I think that the alternate exists there. Like, George W. Bush's reading lists were published every year while he was in office, while he and Karl Rove had a contest about who could read more each year.
I know that's there, but I'm just saying, are you alienating sort of the red versus the blue, whereas someone like Zuckerberg or Taylor Swift
it's not any more alienating than like Bill O'Reilly's book suggestions are to liberals like me.
Right, right. Or I guess, did a bunch of Republicans go out and buy California? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. Maybe they did. It's interesting to think about. But I think with Zuckerberg, we're talking about a short list of 7 or 8 people in the world that could start a book club that would be as impactful and interesting.
Right. Like,
I'd
be interested in what would happen if Goodreads started making one editorial selection
a
month.
Yeah.
Like, this is
that's
the Goodreads
really interesting
book of the month, but they have 25 million signed up users, but about 5 million.
I think it's active more like users, 7 or 8 or 10 million monthly active users.
Yeah, it's only a percentage of the active users of Facebook, but the average Goodreads user is a much more engaged reader than the average Facebook user is. So probably a higher percentage of those would buy the book.
If they wanted to, they could push it into every single person's feed. You know, like it just appears.
And it could appear on Amazon as the Goodreads selection of the month, which could go to even people who didn't follow Goodreads.
I guess if Amazon itself did one pick a month and they put it on sale or whatever.
Oh, yeah. That's, you know, now I really wonder about like Celeste Ng's Everything I Never Told You. That was the Amazon number one book of the year. Like, that was the Amazon editorial selection as the best book of the year for 2014. What did that do to her sales?
I mean, I've watched the bestseller list, and it definitely moved up. I think it got into the top 20, but I don't think it cracked the top 10. But the other problem with that is, I think, like, the New York Times bestseller list, I don't even know that it captures Amazon.
Well, and Amazon's ranking, like, it would have been interesting. I wish now that I had followed her Amazon ranking number.
I bet we could ask her. I bet she followed it.
She probably did follow, but
publisher
the
did
ranking
for
number,
sure.
I'm sure her publisher did. The rankings are so weird. Like, if you're far down in the rankings, then selling 6 books in one day can bump you up 100,000 spots.
Yes,
you're in the top 20 or even the top 100, you've got to sell a whole lot of books in a short time period to change anywhere in that position. I just want to know how many copies did that sell? How many people looked at that on went to Amazon.com that day, clicked on the post about editors' picks, and then immediately clicked on Everything I Never Told You and bought it? Because you know Amazon knows that number. And
they know.
I just
definitely do.
I'm interested in what that kind of feature
does. There is something
does.
About the singularity of one identifiable person. You know, like a corporate pick, even if it's a corporation strongly associated with Goodreads or Book Riot itself, if we did our own, book club, something like this, that's different than one person that people can identify with.
What if Jeff Bezos did a book club?
I don't think enough people like him, and he doesn't have a platform. Like, where is Bezos online? Like, what is he? Is he going to do it on Goodreads? I mean, I guess he could, but I don't know. I think there's also a fascination with Zuckerberg as like this wunderkind, and most people use, you know, he's both brilliant and bristly in sort of the public imagination. I have no idea how it's really, and you know, undeniably savant. Programmer, yeah, you know, just
right.
There's just a lot more there that I think, like, finds it interesting. Plus, Bezos hasn't alienated half of book buyers. Right. Like, there's enough vitriol for Amazon that I think
I would have loved to watch a Steve Jobs book club. Like, yeah, if Steve Jobs had been active on Twitter and kept a blog,
yeah,
and
that's interesting.
Run biweekly book selections,
yeah. Well, what about, like, I don't know, what about like Neil Gaiman? I mean, that's one where the 2 point something million Twitter followers, but, or Stephen King, like a real, like, hardcore book person, or our friend Rowling.
Mm-hmm. Now, hey, there, you did now, it right.
There you go.
Yep.
There you go. That's the one. I think I would, if I could magically
the J.K.
sort of,
Rowling book club.
Just like, what is she? Because she reads, you know, she talks about, and she'll mention it. She's not super active on Twitter, but she's got several million on Twitter, several million on Facebook.
You know, if she posted on Facebook about how she was going to start a book club and here was the first selection, we'd be seeing articles just like the ones that we've been reading this week about Mark Zuckerberg.
And if she was picking books sort of even close to the kind of book she writes, they would, I mean, that's the other thing is, like, Zuckerberg has no sort of built in, you know, sort of genre or taste affiliation. So you don't know kind of what you're getting at, which I think is kind of the part of the fun. It's like, when I saw these starting a book club, I had no idea what the first pick. I mean, literally, I was like, this could be anything. So, but now that we're going to see it with nonfiction, kind of wonky, to be frank, not that that's bad, it's just what it is. But if Rowling picked, I don't know. I'm just trying to think. The Night Circus.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, or Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell.
Anything that's even close. Like, she'd sell hundreds of thousands, if not more, worldwide.
I'd like. Personally, because now we're just in personal wish
lists. We're just in fantasy land.
I would like an Amy Poehler book club and a Juno Diaz book club. I really want to know what Juno Diaz thinks I should read.
Oh, you know where I'm going with this.
Do I? Tomo?
Yeah, come on.
You know, I went to one of her, I've seen her read a couple times, but at a reading probably like 8 years ago or so, when I was, it was longer ago than that because I was in college. Someone asked her what she was reading. And at that point, her answer was kind of like, I'm Toni Morrison. Who could I possibly read?
Oh, really? Well, that's interesting. Then when she does pick something up, what is it? It makes it even more fascinating.
I am certain that she reads, but I don't think she's interested. Like, she won't let it, she won't let someone write a biography.
No.
We're
in fantasy land.
Oh, right. Activate fantasy land.
Yeah.
Yes, then a Toni Morrison book club.
Anyway.
Absolutely,
yeah,
for sure.
That's a good one. I like that. That's
Mindy
Kaling. Yeah. That's
she could do a great. She would do great book club selections, like a Mindy Kaling book club run at BuzzFeed. That's the internetiest thing ever, and I want it.
Yeah, that's pretty good. All right, we got more stories to talk about. Do we, or maybe we shut it all down now? Anyway, let's do
Where
a couple
do you
more
go?
Stories.
We have so
yeah,
much
let's.
Stuff.
We've got stuff here. Hold on, let me get back to my agenda. I'm now in.
You're
so many
still
open
over
tabs.
In fantasy land.
Yeah, let's see. Sales, we talked about this. You know, here's a quick one we can do that's just our ongoing concerns. Scribd raised – let me back up. So Oyster and Scribd are kind of like – I don't know if people think about this, but in our imagination, it's like the Coke and Pepsi of ebook subscription services. Full disclosure, Oyster has done some advertising with us before. You and I have both used Oyster – personally before, and we've tried out Scribd, but I don't currently use it, at least, and they haven't done any sponsoring with us. So all the disclaimers in the world. Oyster raised, I think it was $14 million new money in the fall after their first round, which was a couple million. Now Scribd just came out and said they closed another round of $22 million. So they got more and they're second. So I don't know if there's anything to say about this, except that, you know, a lot of tech companies that have any kind of growth at all right now are getting a bunch of money, but that's enough money that they're not closing up tomorrow.
Yeah. And buried in this piece at TechCrunch is a number that I have been wanting to see.
Oh, yes.
We were talking
about
how user numbers. I think we talked on our end of year show about how we were following the development of ebook subscription services. We liked that. We were interested, but no one was talking about adoption rates. Mm-hmm. This piece says, with over 80 million users in nearly every country.
Now, 80 million users? That cannot... Wait, is that... Or unique visitors?
It says users. It says... It's a quote from...
Scribd? Or from someone... Wait, Scribd or their subscription? Because remember, Scribd, their main business is like document sharing.
Right. And so they're not... specifying about the
until they give me the straight up number of subscription, I think it's all bogus, smoke and mirrors, tech, we're crushing it, junk.
Yes, I agree.
But there is something, well, you're right.
Like
there.
One of my original complaints about Scribd was that I already had an account with it because publishers use Scribd. Like if you see a banner ad that says like click here to read an excerpt,
yes.
Awesome. They're often, I don't know why I'm saying totally tongue-tied. Often those excerpts from new books are published on Scribd. And when I went to have my Scribd account, it was like the books that I was looking at to read were all mixed up with any previous document I had ever read.
It was wonky there
on Scribd. And I don't know if they've worked that out. Oyster won my heart by being first to market. So I haven't looked, but 80 million, they've got to be talking about...
That's visitors. Because if that were subscribers, that's $800 million a month almost. That would be bigger than the whole publishing industry.
Right.
It was just $5 billion revenue a year for them.
Right. And the last time we saw any numbers were from, I think, from Oyster
tens
at the six-month mark, and they had like tens of thousands of users at the six-month mark, and now they're at like a year and a quarter, and we haven't seen numbers yet, but... Even if Scribd is winning, and I have no idea if they are, they're not.
No.
They don't have 80 million subscribers.
What's interesting is that neither Oyster nor Scribd seem sufficiently proud of their subscriber number to say
to talk about it.
That's the only data point I'm taking from all
there that. There is a development. Like, I got an email from Oyster this week about how they're going to announce, they're going to make a big announcement next week about another publisher that's coming on board, but that is. The details of that are embargoed until the 13th. So if you're listening to this,
I'll be waiting with bated breath.
Go poking around on the 13th to see what that announcement is.
There all why? Just give me the day before. This doesn't make any sense.
It's the internet. Like that. I mean, this is a total inside baseball, but embargoing news on the internet is just silly.
Yeah, it is silly. There's something else I was going to say about this.
22 million.
Here's a question. The last, I haven't looked at Oyster in a while, though I think I'm going to fire it up again for the spring and summer. It's fairly full-featured. Where are they going to throw 22? What are they trying to do that they can't do now? That's one thing I'm interested in.
So, that's a good question, is out of this 22 million for Scribd, how much of it goes to the subscription service and how much of it goes to everything else? Like,
The rest of the Scribd's enterprise,
Right.
Because it's not like when I use Oyster, at least, I'm not like, if only they had X, Y, and Z. I mean, I guess there's a couple of things, but who knows? I don't know enough about development costs, I shouldn't say. But one thing that is, what does the future iteration look like? What are they, what on the inside of Scribd and Oyster saying, if we only had $10 million more, we could do this.
I guess, as they add titles, there's development costs just in getting those titles.
Database things, and I
formatted and put in, and like, Oyster's got all the editorial front end, so some of the money is going to paying their editors to put things together and recommend lists.
Okay, what do you do with the other 21 million?
Right, anyway, I assume Scribd is doing some of the same things, but I'm interested in how much of this 22 million is going to the subscription and what percentage of their user base are subscription customers.
Well, as they get bigger, they probably have to do more publisher relations and sales and marketing and, big boy, stuff.
A veiled thing. CEO Trip Adler told TechCrunch that Scribd reaches. So it says more than 80 million unique visitors each month, and so they took that 80 million unique visitors and turned it into that quote about 80 million users.
That's
in nearly
every
country.
Fuzzy math.
That's some hand waving.
Yeah.
And he also didn't specify how many of those visitors are actually paying subscribers.
Mm-hmm.
But he did say that subscriptions have been growing an average of 31% each month since the service was unveiled in October of 2013. So that's early, fast growth.
Is it that fast?
31%? That seems...
It's average.
I guess that seems good.
See, that, watch out. Because if it
there's
tripled...
There's a lot of hand waving
if it
in this
tripled
paragraph.
From... If it went... Because we can do this math with our own numbers, right? Like, right. Our own, like we're up 30 times in 3 years. Well, okay. Yeah. That's because you start from zero.
Right. An average of 31% each month is tripling every 3 months, right?
Well, it depends on how they're averaging it. Because say they went from 1,000 to 10,000 the first month.
Yeah.
And so then basically, they go from 10 to 20 ever since then. You could still say we average 31%. It just depends on how they're
so basically
calculating.
We know nothing.
Yeah. I think until we get an actual, this is how many paying subscribers we have right now. What I'm hearing is we're not happy with the number. No, I mean, that's just how I am. Maybe that's unfair.
I think if you're excited about your number, you start talking about your number.
Right. The exception to that has been historically Amazon Kindle sales, especially in the early days when they're selling a jillion of them and they don't break it out for reasons I don't fully understand. But anyway, okay, so that's one. Let's see, where else you want to go?
We kind of did this. Connie's advice column.
Yeah, there we go. We did. There's a print book sales row 2%. We kind of talked about that already. That books are not as they're not off life supported. Maybe even walking around with a walker a little bit. Okay. So Haruki Murakami is going to write an advice column called
Mr. Murakami's Place.
I can't believe that's what it's called. Maybe it's that's the English translation of the Japanese title will be. It's going to be on his own website. So it's not for a newspaper or anything else like that. It's going to be on his own website. And he's going to take reader questions and then respond to them.
Offering his opinions and advice on how to tackle all manner of difficulties. He'll receive questions of any kind, it says.
He'll answer fan questions on his likes and dislikes, including cats, favorite animals of his, the Yakult Swallows, his baseball team he supports. I'm sure this was about jazz, and also falling into different worlds when you're accidentally walking down the street.
And presumably running. If you had asked me...
Are you going to ask him a question about running? He wrote a whole book about that. I kind of covered running.
Maybe he will choose not to answer those, but once you position yourself as a person who's like interested in / expert on something, people want to ask you about that. So probably they will. If you had told me that a famous novelist is going to
This is what I said in Critical Linking today. I said that he'd be like number 739 on my guess list.
I would never have guessed.
Doesn't seem like his deal. I mean, he's an interesting guy. I mean, I'm sure he's smart. He's smart and
like introspective and thoughtful. I think you'll get great answers. Someone should like submit the same question to Murakami and to Cheryl Strayed's new Dear Sugar podcast and then compare the answers.
That's interesting. Yeah, I wouldn't have guessed Murakami, though. I'll be fast. The website you are – here's an interesting – again, I don't know how public relations work. This doesn't make a lot of sense to me. There was a press release about this, but the URL for the website and the email address for questions are not yet available.
This is a like, stay tuned.
I don't get it. This I wonder also why feels like, he's doing this. Why would you do this?
Maybe he just decided it would be interesting.
He just wants to do it? I mean, the other thing that's hard to even in the U.S. where he's a big deal in the book world, in Japan,
huge deal.
It's just it's very difficult. We don't have an equivalent.
He's like rock star status,
like rock star guru, sort of, kind of like a Beatle kind of situation.
He's 65, which I never remember.
Yes.
So he's got a lot of life experience, and presumably wisdom to share.
He started out, he ran a jazz club in the earlier iteration of his life and all interesting the interesting guy. Interesting guy. So it's an interesting prospect, but just in terms of like, here, Jeff, a big name author, like Nobel contender every year level author, is going to start an advice column. Who you got?
Now I'm just going to start dreaming about Marilyn Robinson's advice column.
Did we just finish the bingo? I think that we just finished the bingo. The bingo. That wouldn't have been one. Stay tuned for that. I guess once this is live, we'll have to take a look at a few of the questions.
Yeah,
and
I'm definitely going to be following that. This is totally unexpected. And I guess that makes me really excited for it, that an author who's huge and has a huge following, he doesn't have to write an advice column. He doesn't need any more exposure. This seems to be driven by his interest in doing it. Like, he woke up one morning and was like, I think it would be interesting to interact with my readers in this way. So I'm going to do this.
I guess, though, if you would have said, what author is going to do something you wouldn't expect? Now, Murakami climbs the charts a little bit there.
Yes.
So, and maybe in that way, we shouldn't be surprised that we're surprised. I don't know if that works. Can you do that? I'm not sure if you can say things like that.
I'm not sure what we're talking about.
Let's get to new books. We're running long here.
Yeah.
We've got good books to talk about.
So many good books. This was the first giant new release day of the year. And I had to do a lot of narrowing down. for new books, which is a great problem to have. But like, and we've talked about how like January has become a time for releasing.
Again, I haven't been following it for that long, but it does seem like this first week in January is whatever pent up titles there are from basically mid November on. Sort of, this is the first time to get them out.
Yeah, and like Edelweiss is the cataloging service I use to keep track of all of these.
Which is open to the public, right?
Yeah, it is open to the public.
So it's abovethetreeline.com.
Yeah, edelweiss.abovethetreeline.com. You set up a free account and you can search for, you can search in all kinds of ways, but I search usually by release month because that's how I'm looking at things. And you can narrow it down by format, by publisher, by genre. You can search for books that take place in certain locations. So
stuff
like,
that's coming out mostly, I should say, right? Yeah.
Usually catalogs. It's forward-looking stuff, but you could be like, you know, I live in like Central Kansas and I want to pick a new book that takes place in Central Kansas for my book club. Like if there is a new book that takes place in Central Kansas, Edelweiss will help you find that.
Good place just, to get to lose a couple hours. Because we find out about stuff just randomly browsing there all the time.
All the time. I do, you know, sort of regular dives into like what's coming out in March, what's coming out in April. And there's always something that I'm interested in that has not crossed my desk, hasn't shown up in the mail, that I didn't get an email pitch for, and that somehow magically no one in my Twitter feed has talked about. There's always something to be
discovered. I think the new Morrison was discovered first that way. Someone's like, wait, there's a new Morrison book and no one's talked about.
Yeah, that was like, we saw people sort of talking on Twitter about She Turned It In, and then all of a sudden the digital galleys were available for reviewers there. So anyway, Edelweiss, it's great. And I tag things by release date, and then Edelweiss shows you your tags, and the size of the tag font indicates how many books you've tagged there. So my January 6th tag is like huge in that word cloud. So anyway, maybe Edelweiss should sponsor this
show.
Yeah,
seriously, right?
Almost Famous Women by Megan Mayhew Bergman, which I talked about briefly at the top of the show, and I think in our 2015 preview. It's her second collection of short stories. She is one of my favorite writers and is also a friend. So disclaimer, but she's awesome. Each story in the collection is about a real woman whose life was spent adjacent to fame somehow, but who never quite became famous herself or was really in the spotlight. So there's one about Lord Byron's illegitimate daughter and the woman who basically raises her at the convent orphanage type place where she's sent to grow up. There's one about one of Edna St. Vincent Millay's sisters. There's one about a set of sisters who are conjoined twins who used to be performers, and Megan imagines them now sort of finishing out their lives working as baggers at a small town grocery store and living in a trailer together and reflecting on their life of previous fame. It's so interesting. Like, I don't think I've Googled things from a book more than I have Googled stuff from Almost Famous Women in a while. Like, these, because these are all real women.
They're all, true-ish, based on true stories.
Yeah, but Megan took, you know, took what she could find in the history about their lives and then imagined what would have happened after, or imagined what, you know, intimate personal moments would have been like that never would have made it to light. I thought it was really fascinating and just a cool idea for a collection of short stories. And she's on a huge book tour right now, and the internet is, you know, loudly praising the collection. So I don't think we're alone there.
No, it's great. I really
in recommending
it.
It's awesome. Half Resurrection Blues by Daniel Jose Older is also out this week. His collection of short stories, Salsa Nocturna, came out in 2012. And the main character of that collection, it's sort of, they're linked stories, is Carlos Dela Cruz, who is half dead. He died and then was half resurrected. He doesn't remember most of how he died, but so now he's half dead and he works for the New York Council of the Dead. So we're talking about speculative fiction. In the collection of stories, it's his job to like go around and stop dead people and entities and like supernatural beings from doing stuff that the Council of the Dead doesn't like. He's kind of a hired gun in that way. Half Resurrection Blues is a full novel that serves as a prequel to that. So we see him, we see Dela Cruz wandering New York, feeling like he's the only half dead in betweener type being, but he bumps into other ones.
Half dead in New York is what I like to call it, Monday mornings. That's too easy.
Yeah.
It's not. Come on, Jeff.
I love the voice of Older's writing, and the
he's an interesting guy.
There's this like great he is interesting.
It was an EMT for like 10 years in New York. Yeah, very interesting.
There's just this sort of like swagger. There's pop culture references to it. I really loved spending time with these characters, and I hadn't read anything that was quite like.
I guess technically you might call it urban fantasy, right? It's not a genre I know a lot about, I have to say.
Yeah, I think that it would be the technical. And Half Resurrection Blues is new out in mass market paperback, and it's the first in his Rumba, I think it's called Rumba Street. Mm. Hang on, it's on my desk. Bone Street Rumba novels. So there's going to be more about this character and this world. And it's like
mass market paper? It's like,
yeah.
It's like
a $7.99 mass market paperback.
Bucks, yeah.
Yeah, and it's great. If you're at all interested in what I've just talked about, I would say go, you know.
Yeah, forthwith.
Yeah, forthwith. Plunk down the $7.99 or get it from your library. I just thought it was a ton of fun. In paperback this week, All Our Names by Dina Mengistu, who won a MacArthur Genius Grant in the last couple of years for his writing. I just read this novel over the break.
Oh, it's good.
Oh, it's so good.
You read the first one? How to Breathe the Air?
No.
I can't remember the name of it.
And now I'm just mad at you for not recommending it to me. The narrative alters between or goes back and forth between two characters. One is a young man who goes to the capital city of Uganda to be at the university, but not as a student, during the time that a revolution is beginning. And he's telling the story about this young man named Isaac that he met who became really involved in the revolution. The other narrator is a woman named Helen who lives in a small town in the Midwest, is a social worker, and farther in the future from the first storyline, a man named Isaac is delivered to her as one of her charges as a social worker to help him get set up in his new life, and they begin a love affair. And through the two narratives, we start to understand who Isaac is and what was going on with this revolution, with these students, mercenary kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
There's a big surprise in the narrative, mm-hmm. like halfway through. Man, it was so good.
That's good. He's really good. Really
and
good.
I think my favorite memoir of last year, A Few Seconds of Radiant Film Strip by Kevin Brockmeyer. That's out in paperback this week as well. It's the memoir of Brockmeyer's seventh grade year. He wrote it in third person, which is one of the things that made the book so interesting to me, that instead of it being about what I experienced in seventh grade and all the horrors of adolescence, but the humor and the humility, it's about what this character named Kevin experienced. And that shift in narration, at least for me, made it easier to think about the experience of adolescence, my own experiences of seventh grade, and get that sort of narrative and critical distance from it that you don't often get in first-person memoir type stuff. It's just beautifully written. Brockmeyer is a great, I think, underrated writer.
People who know and have read Brockmeyer are Brockmeyer zealots. But beyond that, it's not. And what was the big novel?
Illumination.
The Illumination, yeah.
Man, that's such a good book. A
couple years ago, right?
Yeah, people, all of a sudden, this thing happens in the world where people's wounds emit light. And so, like, physical wounds emit light, but also if you have a headache, your head sort of, like, pulses with light. And so all of a sudden the ways
in
which—
We need a word for those kinds of books where suddenly something unusual just happens everywhere, kind of like with a Leftovers, you know, or something
like
that.
It's like a big global phenomenon.
You're under the dome or, like, interesting.
Yeah,
but it's because it's not like zombies or something. It's like suddenly there's this new characteristic in the world and people are dealing with it. Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's speculative fiction
We can argue about this again.
No one wants our three-hour argument about speculative fiction. Our coworkers have still not recovered from that.
Yeah, they really haven't.
But if you haven't read Brockmeyer, please do. Mm-hmm. So good. Those are the new books this week.
Dina Mengistu's debut novel was How to Read the Air. And the reason you never heard me talk about it is because it came out in 2010, sort of before I knew you that well. So,
but you read All Our Names.
Yeah, I did. I don't know. I didn't talk about it. What do you want me to say?
A catalog of ways in which you failed me.
Yeah, I know. There's not enough paper in the world.
That's our show,
That's
Jeff.
Our show. That's our show this week. Thank you so much for listening. As always, you can shoot us an email, podcast@bookriot.com. You got a follow-up or a comment or question for us. We're on Twitter. I'm at the Jeff O'Neill, O-N-E-A-L. She's at just regular Rebecca Shinsky, not the Rebecca Shinsky, S-C-H-I-N-S-K-Y.
There's already show notes, only
one. Show notes, bookriot.com/podcast. And that's our show. We'll be back next week.
Yeah, you can shoot us an email.
I said that.
Oh, you did. Yeah. Okay. Right.
I mean, you can still do it. I mean, you can say it twice. Not a problem.
Man, coffee. Let's just go have coffee now.
Let's go warm up.
Have a good week.